You are listening to The Issues of Life with marriage family therapist John Jolliffe. 60 minutes of radio therapy designed to help you grow up, not just old.
Hi, welcome to The Issues.
My husband had an affair 7 months ago.
So how do I get over this obsession? Because it's really bugging me.
It's not about loving, it's about rescuing. Adultery?
No. What is it?
No. You can't trust her because you don't trust yourself. You have generalized this difficult relationship you've had with your mother to include all of us. Listen, we're not all alike, and you know that. And we don't have her background. Spend a little time in her background, her family of origin, and you'll know a whole lot more of why Pat was the way she was.
Now here's John.
This is John Jolliffe, and we're here to talk about relationships. And, you know, when two people form a relationship, they have to continually take risks to keep it alive. A relationship in which there is no risk is a relationship that is stagnant. And when two people form a relationship, they come from such different backgrounds. One person might be, shall we say, less mature, less developed. In a sense, if we allow our relationship to be committed, connected at the weaker, more immature parts, our relationship will never really develop. It's doomed from the beginning. And although we never stop growing, a relationship that does not allow both parties room to grow cannot survive happily. If you're required to remain the same, now if somebody asks you not to grow, not to change, not to develop, not to evolve, and that's not said so literally as it's said subtly in the relationship. But if you get those messages that do not allow this relationship to grow, let's say for the sake of a relationship, you stay stunted. You remain in this familiar cocoon. Or if another person's feelings don't allow you really to develop your full potential, the full potential that God knows you're capable of, you will eventually feel cheated. And what happens when we feel cheated? It begins to erode the relationship. It's an unavoidable law of life that when a person is denied the right to fulfill their God-given potential, their ability to love begins to fade, and that needs to be spoken. That needs to be communicated with those significant others. If you want the best kind of relationship, you have to risk losing it. Many times, as I've told you, you need to terminate one relationship in order to save the relationship. A person who is afraid of speaking the truth because it may hurt another person can never give their best self to that relationship. You know that's true. You know that's true. Let me talk about sharing ourselves. Because in a relationship needs communication. We share ourselves with other people in order to correct the loneliness of the human condition. Have you ever heard somebody say, "I know what you're going through. I really feel for you. I really know where you're coming from"? Well, it's a nice gesture, but it's never true. Because we never can feel for somebody else. We never know what they're really going through because human experience is a very isolated, individualistic experience. Each person's life is rather unique. And so in an effort to overcome that isolation and loneliness, if you will, we try to overcome our limitations in communicating our thoughts and our feelings. And there are a lot of advantages of doing that. There are tremendous advantages. One of the advantages of being open with other people is allowing people to know you better. It helps to know yourself better. I tell you that the people who have the highest sense of esteem, they have the more confidence and boldness to take the risks that life requires, are people who are more outgoing, who communicate more, who understand themselves better. The other advantage is that when you allow your private thoughts and feelings to be shared with another person, it makes your reality seem more real, more tangible, something about which you begin to feel more secure. And being able to confront other people means that you share out of confidence. You're sharing out of confidence. You have a sense of believing, at least you're right to say what you need to say. I've told you in programs before that you need to find your voice. It's very important to find that voice. You share out of confidence, not withhold out of fear. And when you confront, it means that you share something that you find important. Because how can we work with each other unless we understand? When you confront that something you don't like or feel is unfair, you become a supporter of justice. It's true. Hello there, Ruthie.
Hi.
Is it Ruthie?
Yeah.
Why is it not Ruth?
Well, because Ruthie sounds younger the older I get.
What are you going to call yourself when you're 50?
I don't know.
Ruthette or something, huh?
I don't know.
Okay, Ruthie, how can I help you?
Well, actually, I'm calling you because...
I need you to speak up for me, though, okay?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm on a cheap phone.
one of those magazine subscription things.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Premiums.
So we can afford, you know?
Okay, okay.
I'm really suicidal, and this comes after a manic episode. And I feel
Gee, you know, I would have expected you to say anything but suicidal.
Why?
Well, because there's that cute part of you that you just offered up.
Oh.
I said, why do you call yourself Ruthie and not Ruth? And you said, because I, the older I get, the, you know, all that stuff you just said.
Well, I...
Isn't that interesting that there's this real cute, funny, if I may say so, part of you, and you want to kill yourself?
It's... I'm well practiced at putting up quite a front of being really okay and playing the sociable game really well.
Uh-huh.
And inside I don't feel that way at all.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I want to find out what the basis of all this is, okay? Mm-hmm. Will you stay with me?
Yeah.
I need to take a commercial break.
Okay.
You go get some fresh sparkling water or something healthy, and
okay.
I'll be right back, okay?
All right.
And you'll be back with me. Ruthie and I are going to be back to talk about this particular issue of life and a whole lot more. Stay with us. My name is John Jolliffe.
Who you are is partly the result of who you were. Our childhood and adolescent experiences can leave unmistakable marks on our personalities that last well into our adult lives. Whether those influences become an asset or a liability is up to us. In the 2-CD package, The Power of the Family of Origin, John Jolliffe helps you understand your personal history, gain a fresh perspective on your past, and chart a course to a more fulfilling future.
If you have been a victim in an earlier period in your life, you will hold on to the memories of your past and resent them, and the real problem is that you're still a victim today. So why don't you just change?
I just feel like I'll disappoint people. I'll hurt her.
Uh-huh.
She's had a lot of hurt.
But isn't it time for your mother to grow up?
Yeah.
The Power of the Family of Origin. Available at issuesoflife.info for just $15.99 plus shipping. Log on today to issuesoflife.info and get your copy of The Power of the Family of Origin.
This is John Jolliffe, and I'm speaking to Ruthie. Ruthie's 37 years old and struggling with suicide. What you told me is that you have your pills all lined up right there in your... Where are you? In your room? Your bedroom?
Yeah, I'm in my bedroom.
In your bedroom. You have all your pills lined up.
Oh, yeah. They're always right there.
Right there, ready to take.
Yeah.
Not to treat your manic depressive episodes, but rather to kill yourself. That's
well,
what you just told me.
I took that part.
You took the manic depressive part.
I took my regular medicine like I always do, and then I took some extra tranquilizers just to keep from feeling.
Just to keep from feeling.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
And
another way you keep from feeling is the manic part, don't you?
Yeah.
When you get into the manic part, that keeps you from feeling your depression.
Right.
It's your way of running away from your depression.
Right.
You even told me off the air that you feel hopeful when you get manic-y.
Right. I feel like...
There's hope.
There's hope, I feel like.
But when you start getting closer to your depression, you start thinking of taking more medication, almost to the point of thinking of killing yourself by taking too much.
Right.
And it's not to kill yourself, but to kill the pain you're in.
Right.
Isn't that right?
Right.
You've been in therapy for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
In that 3.5 years, what have you learned about your depression?
Oh, God, my head is so full of knowledge.
What have you learned about your depression?
I have learned that I need to be rescued. I need... I look to other people to to try to fix me instead of me going inside of myself, because I'm so afraid of going inside of myself. When I do go inside of myself, all I see is ugliness, awful things that I don't want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And
when it's interesting that as long as you can hate yourself, because that's part of what you're telling me, you don't want to go inside because you find so much self-hatred.
Right.
How long have you felt this way?
I think it seems like forever.
Okay, all your life.
Yeah.
Now, we know it wasn't all your life because you weren't born that way. But something happened, didn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And then a series of things happened.
Yeah.
But isn't it interesting that whatever happened, you're not willing to look at that either? Because the fact that you hate yourself so much, that you could kill yourself, that you go inside yourself and find all that hatred, self-hatred, tells me, are you listening?
I am.
It tells me that you're protecting somebody.
Protecting someone?
Yes. You're suicidal. You're not homicidal. Homicidal may be more to the truth. Although you shouldn't do that either. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because this didn't start with you.
Well, when in therapy, I've had memories of sexual abuse. I know that I was beaten. I know that I was verbally abused by my mother. I've had some memories of sexual stuff that I run away from as soon as those memories come.
There you go. Your manic is your way of running away from the depression.
But I don't want to know who it was.
You want to live with it.
No, I don't. But I don't...
Well, how do you ever liberate it until you know it? How can you deal with what you don't willing to face off with? And see, the other thing you need to understand is that what you don't face, you live with. You give power and authority to those experiences far beyond what they deserve.
But it's so scary.
What's scary? I'll tell you, you want to know what's really scary? You want to know what's really scary?
Yeah.
What's really scary is to try to wall off and defend and deny and run away from the issues you don't want to face and find out that you can't run fast enough and far enough. You can't get enough insulation, enough medication. And that's why people eventually wind up killing themselves. They try to take more and more and more deadening, medicating, so that they don't feel this. And they wind up taking too much. It's called overdosing. That's what's the scary thing. The real scary thing is that you can't get away from it.
Yeah.
It's not as scary saying, okay, step out in the alley and let's deal with each other.
It's, I can't remember who it was, though. I can't.
Let me ask you a question.
What?
Be honest with me.
Okay.
Do you want to know?
Oh, gosh.
There you go, you see? Didn't you just tell me you didn't want to know? You didn't want to feel any of this?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have a bad memory. You don't have a bad mind. You've been telling your mind not to remember, and it's so it's taking instructions from you, and then it doesn't remember, and then you criticize it for being such a bad memory.
Say that again. I'm sorry. I didn't understand that.
I know. It came a little quick. You don't have a bad memory. You've been training your mind not to remember to keep you away from the pain. And now that your mind takes instructions not to remember, you criticize it for being such a bad memory. Can't win for losing with you, can we?
Oh, I know. That's how I am. I know that. I know. I really am, honestly.
All I'm telling you is you need to, if your therapist has ever helped you, if your therapist has ever wanted you to stop running and to turn around and face your perpetrator, your molester, your abuser, whatever it is. Take the advice of your therapist. While you're under care, take the advice of your therapist. Sometimes people are, it becomes so destabilizing that they need to be in the hospital to do that work. But whether you're in the hospital or you're in the office, you need to do that work so that you don't live with this thing, you don't amortize this thing over your whole life. Does it make sense?
Yeah, it does.
It's not as frightening to face it as it is to keep running away, fearing that you're going to have to face it one day, when you're least prepared. Get yourself prepared in therapy to face off with this issue. I've worked with many people in this issue, and I've seen lasting results with people who decide to go for it. Take it on.
Every time he tries to get me to sit still and think, tell him my
he can't.
Thoughts.
He can't. She can't. We can't do that.
I'm saying
no therapist, no pastor, nobody but Christ himself. Nobody can do it.
Yeah.
We are the ones that have to do it. You're the one who has to do it.
Yeah.
Right? You have to determine that you're going to go for it. No therapist can make you go for it.
No, I know that.
Do you understand?
I do.
Now, I don't know how many sessions you're doing a week. Maybe you need to up it. Maybe you need to see your therapist more frequently. If you have confidence in your therapist, go for it. Tell him you need to up the therapy. Tell him you need to be on 24-hour watch. Tell him he needs or she needs to carry a beeper. Tell them, consult with them. Maybe you need to be in the hospital when you do the work, but get it done. Get it done. Get it done.
Okay.
Quit running from this thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't deserve that kind of authority, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Huh? Now, does any of this give you any hope? Does it give you any direction?
Yeah, it does, because it's the one thing I always run from.
Yep.
It's the exact thing I always run from. And as soon as you said that, it just really hit every button inside of me.
You know what's going to happen if you take this advice this time? Not that people haven't given you the same advice.
Probably not.
But everybody who ever gave you this advice that you remember,
uh-huh.
and you face off with this issue and you deal with this issue, guess what? You're going to love us for the rest of your life.
Thank you, John.
And people like me need that. Ruthie, you stay on the line. Let me make sure you get a copy of this tape.
Oh, okay.
And you listen again and again and again.
I would like that.
Go back, give your therapist a call today.
Yeah, I'm waiting for him to call me, actually.
Okay, and tell him this call that you've made, like so many other calls, this call is different. This is a different call.
Yeah.
This is a call to action. And tell him to get out of the way. It's not what he has to talk you into or coach you into or any of that other stuff. Just tell him to have an empty pad, a sharp pencil, and get out of the way. You're coming in.
Thanks.
All right, Ruthie, I enjoyed talking with you. Stay on the line. I'll talk to you off the air.
Okay.
My name is John Jolliffe. We'll be back in just a moment. Yes, just a moment to talk about some other issues of life.
When is it right to risk hurting a loved one in the pursuit of honesty? How can I say the things I've always felt about others but never had the courage to express out loud? What does it take to help another person understand exactly what I'm thinking and feeling? In this assortment of calls from the Issues of Life broadcast, John offers a practical approach to dealing with difficult or uncomfortable relationships.
You know, many people today fear communication. They fear the whole process of communication. But people who are afraid tend to do a couple of different things. Do you have a list of things that are intolerable to hear? I mean, too painful? Do you have too many buttons that are easy to push?
I have way too many.
Do they realize how difficult it is for you to get their acceptance?
Not
you feel
directly.
Like
I told them.
Well, why not directly?
Communication Dynamics, available at issuesoflife.info for just $9.99 plus shipping. Log on today to issuesoflife.info and get your copy of Communication Dynamics.
This is John Jolliffe, and we're going to go talk with Janice. Janice, welcome to The Issues.
Yes, hi, John. Hi. Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's see, you have a niece coming to visit you with your ex being present.
Well, it's his niece.
Oh, it's his niece.
Right.
All right. And ex-husband, ex-boyfriend, ex-what?
No, it's my ex-husband.
Ex-husband.
Yeah, we're separated.
Uh-huh.
And we live apart, you know, in different coasts, and he wanted to bring her out to visit, and, you know, they would stay in a hotel and then come visit me at my apartment, and then we'd go around.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister-in-law and brother-in-law said they don't want her exposed to that.
Now, what is it they don't want her exposed to?
The fact that we're separated and that we're friendly. I don't know.
This is your husband's sister?
And my husband's brother.
Your husband's
and
brother.
And his wife, yeah.
Okay. How do you feel about it?
I'm insulted.
You're insulted by them?
Yeah.
But how do you feel about the fact that the niece would be exposed to a couple that seems to be somewhat amicable, mm-hmm. even though divorced or separated?
Separated.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it's any problem at all. She's been on a suicide watch under their care. I don't see what's so great about their life.
Oh, okay. Well,
so I don't
maybe,
really see what the, you
maybe
know.
That's what this is all about.
I'm not...
Maybe this is what that's all about. It's just they're in chaos all the time, so they found a place to play out of some drama,
uh-huh.
and now they're picking on the two of you. How does your ex-husband or your separated husband feel about his niece?
Well, I tell you the truth, I don't think he has much to do with her, because he and his brother fight a lot,
uh-huh.
and they're not friendly. They're fighting over their estate, so there's money involved. And
okay, so what is your real question? You're fine with it.
I'm fine with it. I guess I'm trying to ask if it is something that would be peculiar. I don't think it is.
No, I don't think so either.
Okay, that's what I was concerned
about.
But
remember, what we were talking about is our experience is not always somebody else's experience. If it's a problem for them, then it's a problem. Now, we don't have to embrace their feelings, their perspective,
mm-hmm.
but we do have to deal with their perspective, and this is their child.
Oh, I agree. I don't have a, you know, I'm not going to fight them on it, but I was
yeah.
very hurt.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And I just wasn't sure whether I was reacting silly or what.
I don't know what the reasons were that caused you to be incompatible with your husband.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's anything to do with that side of the family in terms of what they don't understand and the peculiar positions they take, this is just another repeat of the same pattern.
I'm not sure what that means.
The conflict that they're having regarding you, that niece, their child, being exposed to a working separation,
uh-huh.
and the fact that they can't understand that, and they may be making some trouble for you,
right.
Is just a part, it's the most recent chapter of an old book.
Oh, I think so. They've been putting my husband down for years.
Okay, so this is just nothing new. This is just the same kind of thing. And this is what you can expect, I guess,
yeah.
from that side of the family.
Well, they're always worried that, you know, somehow if his mother comes to visit me or something, that we'll ask for money from her or something.
Yeah.
They're very paranoid.
Well, you know, people who have turmoil in their lives
uh-huh.
will always read something more into things. They'll always be concerned about the what if and around the next corner. And there's no answering these people because they've got drama.
Yeah, it's high drama.
Okay.
Okay, I appreciate it because I was feeling real bad. And I'm thinking, am I doing something weird, you know?
All right, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Call again. Let's talk to Gloria, shall we? Gloria, you can't find your voice.
No, I can't.
Uh-oh, we're going to have trouble here then, aren't we? You need to find your voice enough to talk with me.
Yeah.
What? Now, you can't find your voice in what situation?
Conflicts.
In conflicts. Uh-huh. What particular conflicts are most difficult? I need you to speak up for me.
Well, husband-wife conflicts, or, you know, parents, mom and I, you know, just conflicts.
Okay. And your question to me?
Well, how do I find it? You know, I've tried so hard, but it just seems like I can't come to terms with saying what I have to say.
Well, I think you would find it, and I think you know where to look for it. But I think you're not willing yet to pay the price.
Mm-hmm.
You know what to say, you know who to say it to, and you even know how to say it. Those are not your questions. Is that not right? Is that correct?
I don't know.
You see, Gloria, one of the reasons that you're no farther along in this dilemma No, I know. That's what you're doing. But you're going to have to do a lot more than just listen, aren't you? See, what you're waiting for is for other things to change. You're waiting for people to change. You're waiting for the environment to be safer. And that's not likely to happen. And so what you're going to have to find is you're going to have to find a safe place where you can practice and do something that's very uncomfortable, very un-you. But you're not going to get any farther with this if you just wait passively and learn and listen. You're really going to have to take some risks, aren't you? Is it safe right here with me?
Is it safe?
Is it safe here with me?
I mean, talking to you?
Yes.
No.
Pardon me?
No.
Okay, what makes it unsafe talking with me?
Other people hearing me.
Mm-hmm. And what are they hearing? I need you to speak up. What are they hearing?
Because they're hearing what I have to say.
And why is that so awful?
It's not awful.
I can't hear you.
It's not awful.
It's not awful?
No.
Well, then why are you so quiet about what you believe, what you think, and what you feel, if it's not awful? And why is this situation here with me, even though other people may be listening, why are you so quiet?
That's just the way I am.
That's the way you've chosen to be. Did you know that's not the way God made you? Did you know that?
Yeah.
That's right. You see, we're all born equal. We're all born screaming and crying and urinating and everything else. And what the civilization and socialization process does for us, depending on which family we're given to in birth, what they do is they tell us which holes to keep open and which holes to keep closed. And obviously, your family taught you to keep your mouth closed, right?
Yeah.
And you found it wasn't safe. The life you're living now is the best it's ever going to be. Until you find a safer place to practice doing something different than you were taught, which means you may have to violate many of the convictions and the rules of your household. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot wait for things to improve, because nothing changes until we do.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Let's go and talk with... How about Sylvia? Sylvia?
Hello?
Is your name Sylvia?
Yes.
Well, that's who I'm talking with.
Okay, well, I have a daughter, my only daughter. She'll be 28 next month. And for some reason, she isn't speaking to me. It's about 18 months now. I've written to her. I sent her cards. I asked her to forgive me if I have done anything to hurt her in any way. I know we did go through a divorce, my husband and I. We've been married 28 years, and now we've been through a divorce.
All right. And you're wondering if you have done something that has caused the...
Well, I did. At first, I used to tell her, your father doesn't pay me, or, you know, Maria, you know what your father doing,
okay,
or your mother, things like that. She wasn't living with me, so when I did see her...
Well, so your daughter hasn't told you what it is that you've done, and so now you're guessing.
No, she hasn't. She hasn't.
Let me ask you, Sylvia, what do you believe, knowing yourself the way you are and the way you do life, the way you parent... Your relationship, you know your side of the relationship. Tell me what you think that you may have done.
Well, the only thing that I think that I have done is because when I used to tell her things about her father, she shuts me off. Like if we are going in the car, she'll turn the radio up loud. And then one time she said, Mom, I don't want to hear anything about it, you know?
Well, how about that?
So I feel... Maybe that's why she's not talking to me.
All right.
But I did write apologize. I am very sorry for speaking about your father.
Okay. But if you're speaking about her father. It comes from your frustration with the way things are. Is it possible that not just her father, but other frustrations that you have, you talk about with her, and she's tired of hearing that?
Yes, but I apologize. I mean, I sent a card, and I said, please find room in your heart to forgive me.
Forgive me for what?
Forgive me, and I did explain, for speaking things about your father that, you know, I
yes,
didn't go on to say
but,
everything I tell her.
But, you know, I'm enlarging the conversation now, aren't I, Sylvia? I'm saying it may be that when you have frustrations, you verbalize those frustrations too many times to her, and she doesn't want to hear it anymore.
But I don't want to do it no more, so how could we get back to be friends?
Well, the other thing I'd like you to listen for, are you making a tape of this show?
Pardon?
Are you making a tape of this program?
No.
Okay. I'd like you to make a tape of your voice, because there's a whininess in your voice.
Oh.
I'd like, there you go. You calmed down, didn't you? There's a pain in your voice. And when you come from that high-pitched whine, I think whatever you're talking about, you might even be praising her. She doesn't want to hear that whine.
Okay.
You see? Now you've calmed down. It's much softer.
But how do I get back talking with her again? If she doesn't even want to bother with me anymore.
I think the little times that you get with her, make those a positive experience. Careful of the tone and the sound of your voice. Be careful not to complain about her father or anything else. Plant seeds that allows her the next time to look for the conversation with you as being perhaps pleasant. Surprise her. Every opportunity you get, surprise her by getting off the phone sooner rather than later. All of those cosmetic, if we will, cosmetic changes will be of help to you and an encouragement to her.
But we're not even talking now. I don't even have the opportunity anymore.
Okay, but be careful of the wine. When you feel disappointed or you feel frustrated or angry.
But you see, you know, after divorce of 28 years marriage, sometimes that's so hard.
I know. That's why you need to find somebody that you can talk this thing through. Someone that will listen, someone that will help you with whatever frustrations and fears you have, that will help you so that you don't have all that pinned up stuff when you go to talk to her.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
If you want to stay in line, let Terry, well, I don't know whether Terry can help you with that. Can you talk to her again? Oh, well, let's see. Terry may give you some good referrals.
Okay,
somebody
thank
might
you.
Help you. But listen to what I said to you. The sound of your voice, the tone of your voice, the content, whatever you're talking about, and make it shorter. Okay?
All right.
I enjoyed talking with you, Sylvia.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Terry, maybe you can help her with somebody. You know, one of the professions, if you want to know a new profession that I think is going to be so hot in the next coming years, I think it's voice and articulation. I mean, if you think about it, we've done everything we can to our faces and our bodies cosmetically in terms of plastic surgery. We have dyed our hair. We have been color coordinated. We've got orthodontists to change the shape of our mouth and our teeth. I mean, we've got everything going for us. The one last frontier, do you know what that is? Voice. Voice and articulation. You know, there are voice and articulation coaches and teachers who can diagnose your voice, and they can tell by just listening to it on tape where your parents came from and what part of the country and who had the predominant influence in your life, whether it was a mother or a father. They can take out a twang, they can take out of this, they can take out of that, out of your voice by training you in voice and articulation. Let's talk with Arlene. Hello, Arlene.
Hi.
Hi, welcome to The Issues.
Thank you.
How can I help you?
Well, I was calling. I've been listening to you for a long time, probably when you first started.
You sound so sad.
I am, kind of.
Well, how come?
Well, I've been married for about 9 years now, and I feel really kind of powerless in my marriage.
What's making you powerless?
My voice isn't being heard. I can't, if I decide something for the kids, my husband overrides it. I just feel like I'm being run over.
Okay.
He even does that verbally. I mean, you know, when we're carrying on a conversation,
all right,
and he has something to say, he'll run right over me.
Have you confronted him about that?
Yeah.
All right.
And, I have.
And what does he say? Does he admit it or deny it?
Well, he admits it when he does it, when we're carrying on a conversation.
And do you tell him how it feels when he does that?
I don't think I've told him how deeply it hurts me.
Why not?
I don't know. I guess I don't think he's that deep.
Well, he's obviously...
I don't think he'd understand.
Well, he's obviously not making the connection. Okay. If he admits that he's doing it and continues to do it, then he doesn't really either understand how painful it is for you
mm-hmm.
and how it affects him,
mm-hmm.
because it does affect him, doesn't it?
Yeah.
When he overrides you,
right.
when he doesn't give you a voice, not give you your way, but give you the chance to speak your mind
right.
and let it be considered, when he doesn't do that, he pays for that, doesn't he?
I think so.
How does he pay? Where does that show up?
I clam up.
Well, you clam up, okay, but where does that show up in your marriage?
Oh, gosh, in lots of little things, I think.
Okay, tell me.
Well, it makes me not want to share my heart about a lot of different issues.
Such as the most recent?
Well, if I don't feel like he's hearing me, if he's not really listening, and then he runs me over when we speak, I feel like he's disinterested. So I don't really open my heart up to him as much. I start to emotionally back off.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so emotionally you're not as available to him.
No.
All right. And what other ways?
What other ways what?
What other ways are you not there? What other ways does he pay for the fact that he's not listening?
Oh, God.
That he overrides you, that he just kind of runs over you. How does that show up in your relationship? You
well,
say
I find myself doing the same thing.
You're doing the same thing to him?
Yeah, I find that myself just trying to talk louder than he does just so I can be heard.
And that's not very functional. That doesn't
no,
help, does it? Okay.
I just get frustrated with it.
The reason I'm taking you down this course, and I want you to take yourself after we get off the air, down that course, I'm basically trying to show you that it's not a matter of where he is just powerful and doesn't let you have your voice and you just clam up. There are a lot of other things that he, directly or indirectly, is suffering because he doesn't make this connection. He doesn't get it. He doesn't understand the implications of not allowing you to have your place. And what you can't articulate to him any more than you know.
No, I'm frustrated.
And I want you to know more than just be frustrated. That's what you feel. But I want you to know.
Can I give you an example? Like, we were going to buy bunk beds for the kids.
Well,
I didn't want bunk beds. But he did. And his decision overrides me.
You're going to give me another example. I understand examples. I understand that. But what I think you don't understand as fully as I'd like you to is how you punish him, how he pays a price for that.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks he wins in terms of getting what he wants with the bunk beds.
Yeah.
And you think you lose.
Yeah.
But he's losing far more, I would think, than he's winning.
Hmm.
And I don't think you understand that.
Oh.
And you can't communicate to him any more than you understand.
Right.
I want you to understand how that affects your total relationship. It's not just affecting the beds.
Yeah.
It affects the total relationship in some subtle way, and I want you to understand that.
Yeah.
And then I want you to write him a letter. I want you to write him a letter, and I want you to address this issue. I want you to tell him not only what he does, but how it feels and how it begins to infiltrate and contaminate so many subtle major and minor areas of your relationship together. All right? You write that letter, and then you ask him out for lunch, and you tell him you have a letter that you want to share with him. And then you read that letter with him, make a copy, give him a copy, and have him look it over. So the next time he does it, you point it out again, and that seed that you planted at lunch may grow into some real good fruit.
Have you ever felt like a matador, out there in the ring all alone with an angry bull ready to charge? Intimidating, isn't it? Well, it doesn't have to be. Get a copy of John Jolliffe's 2-CD seminar, How to Be an Emotional Matador. You'll learn how to cope with intimidation and face relationships with courage and compassion. Bullies you face at work, at school, or at home with the children or neighbors won't seem as strong or as dangerous.
Remember, people are literally giving themselves away. They're telling you how to have a relationship with them. You have troubles with men even now? Speaking up and talking about your feelings and thoughts.
Yeah.
So we're looking for somebody, someone. There must be someone out there that has my best interest in mind.
How to Be an Emotional Matador, available at issuesoflife.info for just $15.99 plus shipping. Log on today to issuesoflife.info to get your copy of How to Be an Emotional Matador.
Let's talk to Elvira.
I'm sorry if I don't speak too loud because I'm at work.
Okay.
But
they all know anyway.
I'm pregnant. I'm 7 months pregnant.
You're 7 months pregnant?
Yes.
They must know that.
And the baby's father left me.
The father left you?
Yeah, the baby's father.
And how old are you, Elvira?
23.
You're 23.
Yeah. And he's going off to college, and he says that he couldn't deal with my mood swings.
He couldn't deal with your mood swings?
Right. And then he said that I don't just to hang in there with me until the baby is born.
He said, I need you to speak up, though. We can't hear you.
He said for me to, I told him just to hang in there until the baby was born and that things would get better. And he just couldn't. And he said that he still calls to see how I'm doing, how the baby's doing. But I guess it's just too much for him because he's a full-time student and he doesn't work.
Well, he's a full-time child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so,
okay, but when you called my screener, you said that you're pregnant, the father has left, and you're at ease with it.
Yeah, I'm like, I finally...
Am I in denial of the situation?
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound like you're at ease.
Well, at times I am.
Okay, yeah. I would accept that.
Yeah, at times.
What times are you not at ease with it? What happens?
I guess just when I miss him and I'm not with him.
Yes. How long did you know him?
We've been off and on together for 6 years.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And he would talk about how he wanted things between us to work, and when he got back, we were.
What do you think this is really about?
Just as a responsibility.
But don't you think this is? I mean. The situation you're in now is a difficult one.
Yeah.
Granted, there's a lot of support, and there will be a lot of encouragement for you, and that kind of thing. The questions of whether you should keep the baby or adopt the child out, you know, those are all questions that you should think about. You know, because that's a big decision about being a mother.
Right. Well, I'm keeping the baby, and I told him in different... situations that with or without him, I, you know, me and this baby, we're gonna be okay.
And do you have support? Your family?
Oh yeah, my coworkers, my family, everybody's very supportive. His mother, everybody's very happy for this baby. And at times, I just don't feel like it's over between us. He says he's confused. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know what he wants.
Okay, so setting the baby aside for a moment.
Yeah.
We look at the relationship, which has been hot and cold, on again, off again.
Right.
In and out, right?
Right.
Is that the kind of father that you want for this child?
No.
Pardon me?
No, it's not.
Yes, he indicated that he is going to be anything but in and out. His guilt gets to him, he comes back. His loneliness gets to him, he comes back.
Right.
Whatever's positive about the relationship, he comes back. But because of where he is emotionally, he leaves.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Don't you think that if he does not stand by this child and doesn't stand with you at this time, since he's the one who got you pregnant, that you ought to make a decision for him?
Yes.
And for the baby?
Yes.
And for yourself?
Yes.
And it takes a big person and it takes a mature person to make that decision. But your child, if you're going to keep that child, needs a well-adjusted, secure mother.
Right.
And you've got to start growing up now and make a decision. For him, if he can't decide.
Right.
His history with you has decided already. And if he doesn't support you in an emotional way as well as a financial way with this child, you make the decision on everyone's best interest.
Right. Yeah, and I...
Do you understand?
Yes, I do.
You've got to grow up now.
Yeah.
None of this playing house.
Right.
You own it.
Exactly.
Right? You bought the farm. Now you got to... Grow the crops, my friend.
Right.
Okay, let's talk off the air. My name is John Jolliffe. I'll be back in just a moment with the next issue of Life.
Healthy relationships don't just happen. They're a result of consistent care, creativity, and sometimes careful planning. In a collection of conversations with listeners entitled Relationship Strategies, John examines the reasons why understanding and getting along with others takes more than just chemistry and coincidence.
Withholding, blame, all of these things secure particular gains and entail particular losses for the person who adopts them. What was the pain that began this behavior, this strategy, if you will?
I was married to a man who was abusive to me. We got married because I was pregnant.
You knew your loneliness.
Yes, I did that.
You knew a lot about you in terms of wanting to be attached or involved with someone.
Yes.
You believe it's doing something for you, and you also believe that this is the only possible thing that you could do.
Relationship Strategies, available at issuesoflife.info for just $9.99 plus shipping. Log on today to issuesoflife.info to get your copy of Relationship Strategies.
Oh, these young girls. This, our last caller, Elvira, 23 years old, pregnant. I have a 23-year-old myself, and I hear my children in their voice, you know, that feeling of being overwhelmed and lonely at times. Don't you just, your heart reach out for people like that? And then you want to shake them and say, don't play with sex. Do not play with intercourse. It is a loaded, I want to say weapon. Although I don't think of intercourse as being a weapon. But if you're outside the commitment of marriage, it is a weapon. And it can go off on you any time. And pregnancy is supposed to be a wonderful event, bringing life into the world. And trying to make it work is a more difficult thing. It can. It certainly can. And if Elvira has the kind of support that she needs, she comes from a alcoholic mother and father. Father just died 3 years ago. He was sober at the end of his life. Mother is now sober, 8 brothers, 1. She is the only girl. She's had a lot of challenges in her life. But she has to make wiser and better decisions. Not just now because she's pregnant, but because none of us have anybody else in our lives. We're all alone in this together. And if we're not awake at the wheel, if we're falling asleep, you know, things like this happen. And don't think it won't happen to you. I am absolutely opposed to intercourse outside of marriage because of these kinds of decisions that you have to make. Abortion, keep the child, give the child up. You know, for a child to have a child, none of those are good decisions. There may be better bad decisions, but boy, I tell you, they're all pretty tough. Having a child when you're 23 and haven't had a family growing up, and now all of a sudden, you're going to raise a child when you're not even finished with your own childhood? My friends, stay away from intercourse. It'll be around for the rest of your life. Stay away from it. Figure out who you are, where you're going, and who you're relating to. The interview process is so critical. Stay away from intercourse, my friends. Stay away from it. You have plenty of time with it later. Okay, let's talk to Robert. Robert, welcome to The Issues.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Doing very well, thanks.
I have a problem. Well, I had 2 problems, but I'll speak with one right now.
Okay.
This commitment thing.
Oh, yeah, that commitment thing.
Yeah, the commitment thing.
Jeez. Yeah, I know.
It's like, how can you have one single mind on one single person rather than just have a view of everybody else?
What was that again?
I mean, because how can you stay single-minded and looking at other people?
How can you stay single-minded and not look at other people?
Yeah, female in perspective, yeah.
Well, what do you mean, looking at other women?
I mean, because, my problem is I'm too nice.
Your drifting eyes?
There you go.
You've got what do they call those eyes? The, kind of wall-eyed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like...
Well, you think it's a muscle problem?
Oh.
Okay, look, let me tell you what I was talking last night when I was talking about sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, when we talk about sexuality, we talk about so many things that relate to that.
Oh.
And we were talking about looking. And one of the comments I made was to a woman who said, my boyfriend, my husband, he always looks at other women when we're out in public.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, he doesn't. She says, well, how can you tell me? You don't know me and you don't know him. How do you know he doesn't say? How can you say that?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, because I know. I know.
Hmm.
Listen, I said to her, he doesn't look at other women. what he's doing is looking to see if other women are looking at him.
This is you. All right. Well, yeah.
Yeah, deal with that. What does that mean? What does that mean to you?
That means that, I guess, other women looking at me.
No, it doesn't mean... No, that's your fantasy.
Oh, okay.
That's your hope.
Okay.
Right?
case in point.
When you look over there, that attractive woman,
mm-hmm.
Your fantasy is that she's what?
Looking at me.
That's exactly right. And that's what you're looking at.
Good observation.
It's a dynamic observation. It's really where we live, right?
Right.
This thing about he's looking at other women. What in the world would you ever want to look at another woman for if it weren't to see if she was looking at you? I mean, what are you going to look at? You're going to look at this sweater? You're going to look at body parts? What has a body part done for you lately? What are you going to look at her hair? I mean, what are you going to be looking at? You don't want to look at all that stuff. You want to look and see if a person that you're attracted to for one reason or another, intelligence, maturity, beauty, whatever it is, you want to look and see if a person that you're attracted to is attracted to you.
Oh.
That's the only reason we want to look at somebody else.
Right.
Doesn't that make sense?
Very much so. Very much so.
Amen. End of the sermon. Okay, so what is this thing that you're looking for? You're looking for someone to look at you, which tells you what? What if the woman is looking at you? What does it tell you?
It tells me that I am noticed.
And if you're noticed, then that means you are?
Satisfied of my looks.
That you're significant.
Yeah.
That you're important.
Mm-hmm.
That you're valued.
There you go.
Isn't that what you're looking for?
Very much so.
You're looking for fulfillment of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what happens if the rest of the world goes blind?
Then
you're in a bad place, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, how come you have to have that determined by other people? Why don't you know you're special and valued and important?
Well, because I'm more of a negative neutral person.
Negative neutral?
Yeah.
That's like kind of dead.
There you go.
But you see the point?
Yeah,
the point is what you need in life, you've symbolized by looking at other women.
Mm.
And why is it women? Why is it not men? Why aren't you looking to see if a man that you might be attracted to for whatever reason, why don't you look to see if he's attracted to you or finds you interesting or valued or important?
I think that's a bad thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You think that's a homosexual thing?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? You so sexualize this need that when a man looks at you in envy or in competition or in some kind of appreciation, you get real uncomfortable because he's looking at you.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It is.
If we look back at your childhood, would we find that your father took interest in you?
Actually, my father left when I was 7.
Did that create any particular empty need?
Very much so, yeah.
Okay. Then why do you continue to deny that need in you? Why did you think that a woman could take your father's place?
Because I feel that a woman is supposed to look at a man. Because it's...
But you didn't have a father, so, and maybe nobody stepped in to take your father's place, but did you know that a father's supposed to look at a boy and be appreciative and look at him in love and look at him as being special?
Hmm.
Not just a woman's job. You and I are going to talk off the air. My name is John Jolliffe.
You've been listening to the Issues of Life podcast with marriage family therapist John Jolliffe. John would like to hear from you. You can email him at writeme@johnjolliffe.com. Jolliffe is spelled J-O-L-L-I-F-F-E. If you'd like to know more about John or order any of the resources you've heard about today, log on to issuesoflife.info. Thanks for listening, and join us again for the next Issues of Life.